Stanton, in separating the wheat from the chaff with regard to the MJ-12 documents, I would assume that on your website you have done so and have the documents no doubt available for download or whatever, right?
Well, they're in the book, and I have, actually there's a paper on there, sort of an update on Majestic 12, and this chapter in my book, a whole new chapter, and the book just came out this past September. It's already in a second printing, which is a good sign, I guess. I review the objections, lots of them, that have come out since the book was originally published in 1996. And there's been no shortage of objections. But I try to point out, and I also point out, of course, that a bunch of documents are fraudulent. My approach to this kind of thing is I've been to 20 archives. Early on, I talked to the families of all but two of the original MJ-12 people to get more insight into the people. I look at their papers. I find out what they were doing. I found people who, a man named George Elsie, worked for President Truman the entire time he was in the White House. I didn't ask him, are the documents genuine? I asked, did you see any reason why they should be considered fraudulent?
You could
answer that.
What about when you're trying to actually nail down and verify the veracity of a document? How do you do that? How do you
concretely say,
this one's real?
There's several different things you have to do. Remember, the original two MJ-12 documents, the briefing for President-elect Eisenhower,
yes,
dated 18 November, almost an anniversary of that, 1952. This is before he became president, after he was elected. The original came on a roll of film, so you don't have any paper to test. You can't test ink on those. So you have to look at the content, the style, and is there any information that we didn't know was true when we got the document?
That we now do.
But we now do. And this is where minutia comes into play. For example, I mentioned this Cutler Twining memo in class saying the pica type was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He was flat out wrong. There's another thing in there, and that one is an original document. It's an original carbon, onion skin. I think you're old enough to remember the use of onion skin.
I am.
And some people, what do you mean onion skin? You know, that's when they used carbon paper. Remember that?
Yes.
And that one, you can see the watermark on it if you go to the National Archives, and that tells you the name of the company, and it gives you the dictation onion skin, and you find out when it was made, and it fits. Everything's okay on that score. The security marking on it was top secret restricted, and a whole bunch of people, including the government, said, that wasn't in use at that time, obviously a fraud. Well, the General Accounting Office, when they were doing a search for Roswell stuff for Congressman Stephen Schiff, noted that at one of the facilities they were visiting, several instances of the use of top secret restricted, even though they had been told, Majestic 12 in quotes, in parentheses, that it was not in use at that time. Now, I tried to get copies of those. They said, Stan, the stuff's classified. You can't get copies. We couldn't make copies.
Well, as I recall, the congressman was woefully disappointed in that a great deal. How much of that information was?
Who knows?
Lost or misplaced?
Who knows? You don't get to see a lot of very highly classified, top secret code word stuff. It's very hard to find. And false notions that people have is that everything is automatically declassified after so many years. Well, the Eisenhower Library, as of 2 years ago, still had 300,000 pages of classified material.
That's a lot.
It is a lot.
Yeah.
And there were still, 40,000 at the Truman Library. So, you know, the notion
anyway,
that
anyway, bottom line, you consider this, this briefing business to be the real McCoy.
Yeah, one of the biggest objections, incidentally, I'll just mention two. There are a bunch of others that I cover in this chapter in Top Secret Magic, second edition. But one of them, a military man, said, look, it says briefing officer Admiral Roscoe H. Hillencoder. He had been director of Central Intelligence in 1947 at the end. And he would never have called himself admiral because he was only a rear admiral in 1952. Ha ha, obviously a fraud. Well, when I was at the Eisenhower Library, I had a bunch of memcons, memorandum of meetings, actually, at the White House, written by first colonel and then brigadier general Goodpaster. And at the beginning of each of these memos, which often had a mix of civilians and military people, and some were had been top secret, some just plain secret, some confidential, he listed the attendees, and in every case he used generic rank, including for himself, General Goodpaster. He didn't say Brigadier General, it's signed Brigadier General. So I asked the archivist, I said, what about this use of generic rank, you know, general to mean lieutenant, major, yes, brigadier, et cetera, admiral to cover all the variations. And I said, does that bother you? And it, two different ones I asked independently. No, that was standard practice. Oh. One of Ike's books, he uses generic ranks. And because I was at the Eisenhower Library, incidentally, they got big fat books that'll tell you who everybody was. So I could check to see whether General Jones was a one-star, two-star, or four-star, and almost always he wasn't a four-star.
So in validating this material, it really does seem to come down to the minutiae, really, to the minutiae of everything. Every little tiny,
yes,
tiny point can get argued to death, huh?
Well, the contrast between myself and the noisy negativist on the subject is they're armchair theorists. Let me give you another example. Dr. Joseph Nichols said, well, obviously the date format proves the documents are wrong. 18 November, 1952 violates the government style manual. Well, when you go to the archives, I found one file folder had seven date formats in it. You know.
So it doesn't violate it.
No, it doesn't. There were a whole bunch of these. Minutia is the right thing. There's no signature on the Cutler-Twining memo, just the name, Robert Cutler. He was Ike's national security advisor.
How many more points like that are there in all of this? As points of contention, I guess I ought to ask. Are there many, many more?
Well, the noisy negativists have raised about two dozen, and I've dealt with all of them.
Okay.
I still haven't found any that is satisfactory. Now, you got to probe. You got to do your homework.
And you haven't found any that made you go, huh?
Oh.
Really?
No, not about these three documents. Now, there's a whole bunch of other ones that I demonstrate, again, by finding the original, the technique that was used to create at least seven emulations, I call them. You find a real document in a book, for example. Found three of them in a book by General Albert C. Wiedemeyer. Wiedemeyer reports. He was a China expert.
Right.
Who was sent to China in the summer of 1947. There are three of the documents were, the handwritten portions were Xeroxed or scanned. It doesn't matter. Same difference. And they retyped it with just a few changes. And a few mistakes, usually, to make what look like genuine documents. But once you find the original and you see that this is clearly an emulation of that.
Right.
So I found seven of those. And the technique was the same in every case. The handwritten stuff, three different words. I approve, Harry S. Truman, July 9th, 1947. You can put them right on top of each other.
So you're concluding the same author?
The same technique, certainly the same person